Okay, let's start. So, today the topic for the first hour is how to measure the absorption coefficient of material. We will see four different methods for measuring the acoustical absorption properties of samples of a given sound absorbing material, like for example mineral wool, polyester fiber, a carpet or other kind of soft and porous materials. First thing, we remember how the absorption coefficient is in reality an apparent sound absorption, because we are not really measuring the energy which has been transformed into heat inside the porous material. We also consider the quantity of energy passing through the material and going in the next room, in the adjacent room. It's not important, because what is important for us is only the reflected sound. As we define alpha, the acoustical apparent absorption coefficient, simply as 1 minus R, where R is the reflection coefficient. So when we say that this absorbing material has a value of alpha of 0.7, it means really that the reflected energy is 30% of the incident energy, and we don't care where this 70% of energy is really going. If here there is a very light wall, a great part of this absorbed energy is not really absorbed, but is going through the wall in the other room. Instead, if here you have a very heavy concrete or brick wall, then only a very small part of this 70% will really pass through the wall, and most is really absorbed here inside the wall. This does not matter. What we want now is to measure alpha. We are not measuring the transmission. So, for measuring the absorption coefficient, we have four approaches. The first one is the reverberant room approach, ISO 354, and this is something which we already discussed when we started the concept of reverberation time and we introduced the Sebbin formula. So this is a method based on the Sebbin formula. Second method is the standing wave tube, a pressure, sound pressure measurement inside a pipe, a tube. Third method is a free field method, which can be used outdoor, for example, along roads, for measuring the absorption properties of the pavement of the road, of the asphalt actually, or the noise barrier. In any case, outdoor is free field. And fourth method is the sound intensity method. This can work both inside a tube, like the standing wave method, or it can work in free field, or it can even work in reverberant field, because we tested and it works almost everywhere. So the sound intensity method really works in any kind of environment. Let me start from the traditional absorption method in the reverberant room. We start with an empty reverberant room, which is just a large room of irregular shape, not square, not rectangular. The reverberant room is typically pentagonal in shape, and also the ceiling is sloping, so there are never two parallel walls, for avoiding the creation of standing waves. We don't want the sound to bounce back and forth between two parallel walls. We want the sound to go all around in a diffuse way. So inside this reverberant room, we have truly a diffuse sound field. First, the room is empty, there is nothing inside, just a large empty room, and you measure an empty reverberation time, TE. E stays for empty, and then we introduce the sample of your material, which typically is 10 square meter of carpet, for example, and you lie down the carpet on the floor of the reverberant room. Or in other case, it is this kind of baffles which are suspended under the ceiling. Or you can also enter seats, chairs, or other kind of furniture if you want to measure the absorption of the furniture. It can be clothes. It can be people. You can have, for example, 15 guys coming inside the room dressed in a proper way, the way in which they are dressed change their absorption, of course, and so you can measure the absorption of human body. Anything can be inserted in an echo in the reverberant room. In this very simple case, we just lay down some 10 square meter of carpet over the floor, which is the most simple case. Of course, after entering some absorption material, if you measure again the reverberation time of the room, it will be smaller. So we have a TS, a reverberation time with the sample, which in general is smaller than TE. So you can always write, you can always write that TES with the sample is always smaller than TE without the sample. Okay? Now, just knowing the two value of reverberation time, the volume of your room and the surface of the material you have inserted, you can compute the absorption coefficient. How you do that? Using twice the Sabine formula. You use it first with the empty room. So in this case, you have measured TE, you know the volume, and what you compute is AE, which is the total absorption area of the walls of the room, of the surface of the empty room. So this is the absorption area of the empty room. When you insert your material, the total absorption will be larger because you have again the absorption of the empty room, but you add the absorption of your sample, and your sample is an area S and an unknown absorption coefficient alpha. You know TS, you know the volume, you know IE because you measured it at this point, so you know IE and you substitute the value which you measured, you insert it here. So now the only unknown is alpha, and you can extract the value of alpha from the second formula. Then if you like, you can work out the formula for alpha explicitly, and you get this equation here. The absorption coefficient is O.16 multiplied by the volume divided by the room the sample surface, and then you have this bracket containing the reciprocal of the reverberation time with the sample inside the room and without the sample inside the room. Of course, as TS was smaller than TE, 1 divided TS is larger than 1 divided TE. So this difference is always positive, and you always get a sensible value of the absorption coefficient. This is a typical result of measuring with this technique the absorption coefficient of various thickness of glass wool or mineral wool. The spectrum of the absorption coefficient increase with the value of alpha increase with frequency, so you have this typical spectrum in which the absorption increase with frequency. For a thin layer of material the absorption only is large at high frequency, for a thicker layer of material you get more absorption at low frequency. But I use very often use a trick for not spending a lot of money with a large thickness of absorbing material, is simply to create a plenum between the absorbing material and the back wall. If you leave some gap full of air between the material and the wall, you create a plenum, and you see here with a plenum of 50 mm, you get a peak of absorption here approximately at 630 Hz. Instead, with a plenum of 200 mm, you get the maximum absorption here at 400 Hz. So you can extend at the lower frequency the absorption of such an absorbing layer, even if it is thin, just 50 millimeters of fiberglass of mineral wool, but leaving air behind. This is a quite common trick for extending the absorption towards lower frequency. Another very important thing you see in this chart, particularly in the second case with a 50 millimeter plenum, is the very large value that the absorption coefficient reaches. It is far larger than 1, which conceptually is wrong. How the hell an absorption coefficient, which should be bounded between 0 and 1 means total absorption, how can be greater than 1? The point is that this is not really alpha. This is alpha saving. Is alpha saving because it comes from the saving formula, and the saving formula is not reality, it's just a model of the reality, a model which can be wrong. So for representing the reality with a wrong model, you need to enter a wrong value of alpha inside the saving formula, the alpha saving value. So, alpha saving is not the real absorption coefficient of this material, but it is that funny and wrong number which inserted in such a crappy and wrong formula give you the correct real reverberation time. Reverberation time is measured. Alpha is not measured. This is an indirect method. You infer alpha from the measurement of the reverberation time. So this number here, alpha, is the magic number which is inserted in this formula, which is not correct. The saving formula in general is wrong. It becomes true only under very restricted and defined hypotheses, which are not met during the measurement. Because one of the hypotheses for validity of saving is that the absorption must be uniform all around the surface, and instead in your room all this blue surface has very little absorption, and the only part of the surface which has large absorption is your carpet. So this violates the hypothesis for validity of saving formula. Saving formula is not correct for describing this case, but you are still using it, and employing a wrong formula, of course, you get a wrong value, alpha saving, which is not so wrong in reality. It depends what you do with the alpha saving value. If you are going to reuse the alpha saving value with the saving formula, then it is not wrong anymore. If you are designing the sound treatment of this classroom, for example, and you buy a material in which the maker of the material give you this chart of absorption, for example, with a plenum of 50 millimeters, so this very large peak of absorption here, then if you want to compute the reverberation time in this room, not in the reverberant room, you can use still this formula, and if in this formula you insert this value of alpha, which is wrong but is good for Sebi, then Mr. Sebi does the magic and give you a correct estimate of the reverberation time. A wrong formula fed with a wrong value give you the right value. From a scientific point of view, this thing is an abomination, is something horrible. You should never use a wrong formula with wrong values. In practice, instead, in acoustic, which is not an exact science, this is what everyone is doing. So all the makers of absorbing material give you this kind of chart with the saving absorption, and all acoustical engineers use this value with the saving formula for estimating what will be the effect of inserting this material in your room. And in the end, this works. Often you discover that the situation is even better than the prediction of Sebbing. So the number should be even larger for representing reality. I have a case here to show you, which is quite recent. I closed that. It is a school here in Parma, in Bigatto, where we installed some material on the walls for reducing the reverberation time inside the classroom. Let me see some photo. Comune Parma, scuola di Bigatto, photo. Okay, this is the lunch room, the dining room, and these are the absorbing panel attached on the walls. Then there are also classroom. Okay, here this is a classroom, for example. You see this panel, these are absorber. So a few square meters of absorbing material has been inserted along the walls of the classroom. Okay? Not a large surface, you see. Just some patch of absorbing material here and there. And as you see, there is an air gap behind. So even if this material is just 2 centimeters thick, mounting it distanced with a plenum behind, make them to work also at low frequency. It's the trick which I was explaining to you before. Okay? So they are not against the wall. They are a few centimeters far from the wall. What happens is shown here from the measurement. Okay. Let me look, for example, here at aula 5. A bit too large. No. Sorry. This is a problem of screen resolution. Now it's better. Now, if I manage to remove those crappy things here, okay, now it's better. View. Okay, this is the best I can do with the screen. So here there are many curves. Before installing the absorbing material, we have this reverberation time here, the blue line. And this was exceeding both recommendation, which are now forced by law in Italy. The red curve is the low limit, and the green curve are the optimal value recommended for a classroom. And as you see, the blue line was exceeded both of these. So some material had to be inserted. Based on the value of alpha Sebbing provided by the manufacturer of this panel, I estimated with the Sebbing formula the black line here. So we inserted a surface of absorbing material which was just enough for staying below the green curve. Okay? Then this material was installed. In November we went back making the measurement, and the measured data are the blue line. The blue line is even better than the black one. So even if the manufacturer of this material, I show you the value of this, these are the curves which are given for this material by the manufacturer, the absorption coefficient versus frequency. And you see these curves, which does not reach very large value. The reality is that, perhaps it's this one. Yeah. This was the material which was employed. How can I show it? How the zoom? No. Menu, view, zoom. Okay. These are the value provided by the manufacturer. It's called Mitesco, this panel. And this is the absorption coefficient. As you see in this case, it does not exceed one. They are very thin, just two centimeters thick. Nevertheless, the reality is better than this value. We employed these values for making the computation. I can show you how the computation is done. Okay. These are the measured data. Measured. All measured, where are the computations? Sorry. Calcoli, ok. Aula 5, it was. Ok. This is Aula 5. The volume is 134 cubic meter. The height of the room is 3.3 meter. At various frequency, we have an initial reverberation time, which is just the measured value. From this measured value, in using the inverse Sebbing formula, we compute the absorption area. The initial absorption area is the same as here, the initial absorption area without the absorbing material, TE. So we are extracting the value, i.e., from the measurement with the room empty. And this is this row. You see 16 square meter of absorption at 1 kHz. Then we add the absorption of your panel, which is alpha multiplied the surface, and the surface in this case is U33. Okay, this is the surface of the panel which we are inserting, 12 panel, 8 square meter, not a large surface, and at every frequency we multiply this surface by the absorption coefficient of your material, which has been measured with the reverberation room formula. So in this way you are computing the absorption area, the additional absorption area due to the panel. You sum these two for getting the total absorption area with the panel, and finally you employ back the Sebbing formula for recomputing the new reverberation time with the panel inserted. So you start from a measurement with the room empty, and you can easily compute the new reverberation time when you add the absorption material in your room. As everything is done going forth and back with the Sebbing formula, we are using it twice. We first pass from the measured reverberation time to the absorption with Sebbing, we make the computation of the new absorption, and we came back, knowing the total absorption, to the new reverberation time, again with the Sebbing formula. Even if the Sebbing formula is wrong twice, one forward and one back. So in the end, the two errors compensate. And if you add here an additional absorption, which is computed with the Sabin alpha, alpha Sabin, this one is alpha Sabin, then in the end everything should be correct. In reality, as we have seen, the situation is even better, because the computation give you the black curve and the measured value are even lower, so your material works even better than expected. That's fine, everyone was happy with this result. The result to be reached has been obtained, the low limit are respected, and the classroom is now perfect for doing lesson. So this is how the Sabin coefficient is measured, but most importantly, how the Sabin coefficient is used. So even if it is wrong, because it becomes larger than one, you must trust this value. They are wrong, but they work. So you use them, again, in the Sabin formula, for estimating the new reverberation time when you add your material inside your room. And that's fine. And everyone should be happy with this method. Why there are other three? Let's see. The main problem with the ISO 354 standard is that you need at least 10 square meters of material. What if you only have a small piece of material, a sample, of 20 cm by 20 cm? If you go to a shop and you ask for a sample of some absorbing material, they usually give you for free a small piece of it. They don't give you 10 square meters. You have to pay if you want 10 square meters. And then you need a reverberant room, which is an expensive facility, and you need expensive equipment for measuring the reverberation time. So everything is very expensive. Making an ISO 354 measurement of absorption costs many thousands euros. Whenever a manufacturer wants to certify their products, they go to a laboratory and they spend 2,000-3,000 euros for having the sample being measured. Instead, for small sample, a cheap measurement, the standing wave apparatus is employed. Here we have a standard, ISO standard, which allow for measuring a small piece of material inside this kind of tube. It's also called the tube of Kundt, the Kundt tube, or standing wave tube. Inside this standing wave, you mount your sample at one end of the pipe, where there is a sample holder which is airtight. It's very important that the tube is perfectly sealed. There must be no air gap. Everything must be perfectly watertight, airtight. And inside this special sample holder, you insert typically a disc of 10 cm of your material. For example, of polyurethane foam, of carpet, of some fabric, or so on. So you create these samples of 10 cm diameter and mount them inside the sample holder. The tube is long, more or less 2 meters, 180, I think. 1 meter and 80 centimeter inside the tube with this rod and with this trolley, you can move a microphone. There is a small microphone which you can bring at various positions along the tube. And here inside the box, there is a loudspeaker which creates the plane wave which travels along the tube, bounces over the sample, and partially is reflected back. What happens? What happens is that inside the tube, the outgoing wave interferes with the reflected wave, and this interference is somewhere constructive, and you get a maximum of pressure, and somewhere it is destructive, and you get a minimum of pressure. In the case the sample holder contains a disc of steel, this is a perfectly reflective material, alpha is zero, the reflected energy is exactly the same as the incident energy, so the cancellation theory is perfect, and in theory you should get zero pressure at the nodal point. Every nodal point is distant from the previous one of lambda/2. Lambda is the wavelength. So for this kind of measurement, the loudspeaker must be fed with a perfectly sinusoidal signal, because you use a pure tone. So you measure only at one frequency actually. If you want to measure a different frequency, you need to change the frequency which is generated by this apparatus. This is a pure tone generator, so you bring a new signal in and you get a different interference pattern. When inside the sample holder there is a material which is not perfectly reflecting, but it is partially absorbing, in this case alpha is 0.7, then the reflected energy is less than the incident energy. So at the nodal point you don't get zero pressure, you get a minimum pressure, and here you get a maximum pressure. Now, we call standing wave ratio, in Italian ROS, rapporto onde stazionarie, the ratio between the pressure in the maximum point and the pressure in the minimum point. Both these quantities are measured. Now, if you think to the positive constructive interference, it is evident that the maximum pressure is the incident pressure plus the reflected pressure, and the minimum pressure, where the interference is destructive, will be the incident pressure minus the reflected pressure, because here they are perfectly opposite phase, 180 degrees out of phase. Here instead they are perfectly in phase, so here they sum and here they subtract. Okay? Now, remembering the definition of alpha, which is 1 minus R, but R is the reflection coefficient, so alpha is actually defined as 1 minus the ratio P reflected divided P incident. Well, not exactly, because alpha is defined energetically, so this ratio of pressure for becoming an energy must be squared. Okay? So this is the definition of alpha. If you work out the solution of this equation, you get this result. Alpha equal 1 minus the squared ratio of SWR minus 1 divided SWR plus 1. So you just measure the maximum and minimum pressure moving the microphone with this trolley, with your finger is manually moved this one. You look at this indicator here and you search for maximum and minimum deflection of this needle. You search for the maximum, write down the value, move the trolley, search for the minimum, write down the value, make the ratio is called SWR, and you insert SWR in this formula, which gives you alpha. So it's very easy.
These methods work very well in alarm,
also with a small piece of material. Here is the solution of the linear equation system. We have seen that P max is the incident pressure plus the reflected pressure. P min is the incident pressure minus the reflected pressure. If we solve this linear equation system, we get the pressure incident, which is P max plus P min slash 2, and you get the reflected pressure, P max minus P min slash 2. Then you make the ratio between the reflected and the incident, and you square, substituting this here. And this here, you get this final result, which is also very practical to use, but is the same as this one in the end. Okay? So, just measuring maximum of pressure and minimum of pressure, the standing wave apparatus give you alpha. The problem is this, although this method is very accurate for a laboratory, and you get the true absorption coefficient in this case, bounded between 0 and 1, the measurement is very slow because you measure one frequency and then another and then another, because you work with a pure tone. So it can take more than 1 hour to sample the whole spectrum, and at every frequency you need to move manually, searching for the maximum, for the minimum, write down the number, make a computation. It's terribly slow, this method. Then you need an expert operator, because moving by hand the microphone, searching for the maximum and the minimum, is something delicate. The operator must be careful, must be trained. So, and if you make the measurement to be repeated from another operator, then the results generally are different, because they have not the same sensitivity in finding the maximum and the minimum. So it's not very reliable and reproducible, this method. It depends too much on the human skillness. Finally, it's not easy to create an automated measurement system, employing, for example, a stepped motor for moving the microphone, and then a recorder for recording the sound pressure value and building actually this chart. It can be done, but it is tricky, it is expensive. These electromechanical devices are never very precise. So, in the end, is not the optimum method. It's something which was used in the 60s, in the 70s, because there was nothing better. But nowadays, this method is considered obsolete, and something better can be done. Then we go to the third method. Is the impulsive method for free field measurement of noise screen or of the ground of the pavement of the road or similar thing. Here the picture shows the measurement of a screen, a noise barrier. This is a vertical noise barrier, this is a loudspeaker, which is placed, as you see here, at 175 meter, at 1.75 meter from the wall, and at an H, which is simply half the height of the barrier. You place the loudspeaker here, and you place a microphone between the loudspeaker and the surface of the barrier. Then what you measure is an impulse response. So you need a quite complex measurement system, like for room acoustic, capable of generating the MLS or the sweep signal and convolving the impulse response of your system. So it's not just a stupid sound level meter with pink noise. It is a more involved measurement procedure. What you see, this is a true example of the loudspeaker with the holder with the microphone. This thing here is the microphone, and this is a typical noise barrier for roads. What you see is that when you point the loudspeaker to the sky, there is no reflection, so you only measure the free field. Then you rotate, as you see here, there is a, also here it's shown, it can be turned, it can be rotated. So you first launch the sound to the sky and make a free field measurement with no reflection from the screen. Then you tilt the system down, pointing towards the screen, and make a second measurement in which you see some reflection here. What we are interested into is this kind of reflection, not this one which probably comes from the ground. This one is too late, is not important for us. We are interested in the reflection of the sound going to the wall and bouncing back. This is what we want to measure. So this one is the incident sound, this here is the reflected sound. And all everything else we need to exclude. How can we window the interesting part? With this kind of normalized window called the Adrienne window. Adrienne was the name of a multi-million European project which was done for optimizing this measurement technique. So you apply your Adrienne window to the direct sound, and you apply your Adrienne window to the reflected sound. The length of this window is something less than 8 milliseconds, and it is locked by the standard. You cannot adjust it. If everything works properly, you should be able to get a perfectly separate direct sound and reflected sound. Here you see that the direct sound disappeared. How did you make the direct sound to disappear from the measurement containing the reflection? The trick is very clever, it's simple, a subtraction. As the system was the same, you just subtract the value of the samples of this wafer from the value of the samples of this one. Doing that, you remove the direct sound and you only get the reflected sound, as shown here. But, as you see here inside the red circle, you also get contamination from the ground reflection. Why? Because this barrier was not tall enough. This barrier was 3 meters tall. The ground reflection occurs too early for being excluded by the Adrienne window. If you want to use this method, the barrier must be at least 4 meters long, but even with 4 meters, you are close to the boundary here of the window. You are not safely out of the window. If you want to be safely out of the window, so you want to have this ground reflection here, where it does not cause any harm anymore, then the barrier should be at least 5 meters. And this is one big problem of this measurement technique, because it can only be applied to very tall barriers, not to small barriers. If this barrier is short, this method cannot be applied because you cannot separate the reflection from the barrier and the reflection from the ground. So, in the end, you make the spectrum of the direct sound. The spectrum of the direct sound is more or less flat, depending on the quality of your loudspeaker. Our loudspeaker is very good and it has a very flat frequency response. So, this is the direct sound. Then you instead make the FFT of the reflected sound, and you get this horrible thing here. All those peaks and valleys are due to the fact that we are also processing the ground reflection, and this causes interference and cancellation, and so the response is not smooth like this one. It's up and down with a lot of peaks and valleys. In any case, then from this you get the information of the reflected energy. From this spectrum you get the information of the incident energy. Again, alpha is computed as 1 minus the ratio of the reflected energy divided the incident energy. This is in narrow band, usually you make it in 1/3 octave band, and this give you R, 1 minus R give you alpha. The problem is when you employ the method not for measuring at normal incident, but for measuring at angled incidence. Of course, pointing the source downward and also the microphone, which rotate together the source, the microphone is attached to the source. The microphone is connected with a rod to the loudspeaker. So when you rotate down as the standard mandates, what happens is that the ground reflection is even closer to the microphone, and there is no way to remove it even for a very tall barrier. And so the measurement is always wrong. In theory, the approach for correcting the difference distance from the source, the real source, and the reverberant, the reflected source, which is mirrored behind the mirror. The barrier is like an acoustical mirror, and this is the image source of the real source. So the reflected sound is like coming from this mirrored loudspeaker. Then what happens is that the standard define the distance compensation as a time compensation, because time is proportional to distance, but this kind of compensation, generally speaking, does not work, because the reflected sound is not really coming from here. This screen is not specular, it's diffuse. Remember how it's done, it's not a flat surface, is a corrugated surface. So the reflection is not specular, it's diffuse. So it's not true that the reflected sound comes from a source with this distance. It comes from points along this surface. And so in the end, the time of flight compensation of distance is wrong, and the computed reflection coefficient is wrong. The result is that this method does not work. This is an example. The same noise screen as shown in this picture here, made by Pizzarotti, just for being more clear, was measured in the reverberant room of Istituto Elettrotecnico Nazionale Galileo Ferraris in Turin, which is definitely the best acoustical lab in Italy. So the green line is the truth, is the reality, is what you measure in the reference lab in Italy. No one can condemn this measurement, because this one is the reality. And the blue line is instead the measurement performed here in Parma, employing this crappy method. And the result, as you see, is completely wrong. The values are much smaller than the real one. But what is really annoying is that you get negative absorption at some frequency, where the reflected energy apparently is larger than the incident one. So this method is completely bogus, it does not work, and I warn you, never use this method for measuring the absorption coefficient, because it does not work, it's wrong. Is conceptually wrong, and it is practically wrong, as this experiment demonstrates. Well, the good thing of this method is that if you install a second microphone behind the barrier here, the method can also be used, let's call this M2, can also be used for measuring the transmission coefficient, so the energy which passed through the barrier. This microphone measures the reflection coefficient, this microphone M2 measures the transmission coefficient. The approach is wrong for the absorption, but is quite correct when measuring the transmission coefficient. The transmitted energy is weighted with the normalized spectrum of the road noise, the traffic, the road traffic, the cars and trucks on the road, and in the end you compute a number which is called DL, and this number gives you a A-weighted value already in dBA, which is the sound insertion loss, the sound reduction of your screen. This instead works quite well. So this kind of method work more or less decently for the sound insulation, and instead is completely wrong for sound absorption. Okay. And finally, the sound intensity method, the new one, the our one, because this method was invented here in Parma. And this is very interesting. It was invented in 1993, more or less, 20 years ago, when we first aided by hand one sound intensity probe. Before, sound intensity probe were not available on the market. As you see here, a sound intensity probe is just a couple of microphones with a solid spacer between the microphones. So with this pair of microphones you can measure sound pressure, of course the microphones measure pressure, but you can also measure particle velocity, because the sound particle velocity is proportional to the pressure gradient, so it's proportional to the difference between the pressure P1 and P2 measured by the two microphones. This probe is connected with an analyzer, and the analyzer already provides you with the processed signal, so it already contains the formula for transforming the pressure signal of the microphone in the velocity signal. When you have pressure and velocity, their products give you intensity, so in the end this is called a sound intensity probe, because the instrument already give you a number which is the sound intensity level in dB, and then give you the sound pressure level and the sound particle velocity level. So in practice, with this method you can separate the incident intensity from the reflected intensity. Okay? How the method works? The concept is to go back to the second lesson of this course, when we introduced an ampere energetic quantity which is called the energy density. Energy density is proportional to the sum of squared particle velocity plus squared pressure, sound pressure. The particle velocity is the kinetic energy when you square it. The squared pressure is the potential energy. So the total energy density is just the sum of the kinetic energy and the potential energy. As the sound intensity apparatus give you the intensity level, but it also give you separately the pressure and the velocity, you can compute the energy density. Now, for a plain progressive wave, we have the traditional relationship. We tell you that the energy density multiplied by the speed of sound equal intensity. But the intensity which you measured, the measured intensity, is the difference between the incident and the reflected intensity. So what the probe really measure is this shorter vector here, pointing left to right, because this is the difference between the incident and reflected intensity. So in practice, the energy density multiplied by speed of sound equates the sum of incident and reflected intensity. Instead, the measured value is the difference between the incident and reflected intensity. What is the physical concept here? is that intensity is a vector, so it takes into account the direction. The intensity going forward is positive, the intensity coming backward is negative, and when they interfere each other, you have the difference. Instead, energy density is a scalar quantity. There is no information related to the direction. Both incident and reflected energy flows contribute positively to the total energy density, so the total energy density is proportional to the sum. Again, as in the standing wave tube, you have a linear equation of two equations and two unknown, you know the sum and the difference between the two quantities, so the solution is the same as with pressure in the standing wave tube, and you can compute separately the incident intensity and the reflected intensity. As soon as you know these two quantities, you can compute the reflection coefficient, which is just the ratio between the reflected and the incident energies, and this is R, and of course alpha equal 1 minus R. So again you get a number which is always positive, which is always bounded between 0 and 1, and which can be measured easily provided that you have a sound intensity probe. In this case you don't need an impulse response, the source can be any kind of source, and we manage to measure without any source, employing just the natural noise of the road. If the road has a lot of traffic, that is already our sound source. You place your intensity probe in front of the noise barrier and you measure with the trucks passing close to you. Boom! You average for, say, 1 minute, and that's all. So you don't need a computer, you don't need impulse response, you don't need a loudspeaker, you don't need a special test signal. It's very practical. You only need the sound intensity system. And we tested the method on the same barrier as the previous method, which was not working, and this is the result. In this case we did employ the loudspeaker because it was here in the grass. We are not close to a road here. We are in the countryside. So we did use this dodecahedron loudspeaker for generating the noise. And we scanned the surface. We did not measure just in one point. So you have a spatial averaging. And spatial averaging is a good thing. So if there is some anomaly in some point of the wall, moving the probe and averaging for a couple of minutes smooth out everything. And in fact, this is the result. The measured values are the pink line. The green line is the laboratory reverberant room measurement. And the blue line was that crappy impulsive method. Now, the curve is not exactly the same as the laboratory, but because the acoustical situation is different. What we are measuring here is the normal incident absorption coefficient. What we were measuring inside the reverberant room is the diffuse field absorption coefficient. In the reverberant sound, the wavefronts are coming from every direction. Instead, in this case, the wave only arrives frontally to the wall. At low frequency, you get less absorption with normal incident. With random incidence in this frequency range, the wall works better. So this is different, is due to the different acoustical condition. It's not a measurement error. This is a measurement error. The sound intensity method can also be employed inside a tube. When you place the two microphones of the sound intensity probe inside the tube, you use exactly the same formula as above, and you can perform the measurement of the absorption coefficient employing a wide band noise here. You don't need anymore to use pure tones. So you have all the problem of the traditional method, because now the measurement is very quick, is very reliable and reproducible. You don't have to move anything, there is no moving microphone. You just connect your loudspeaker, insert the microphone, play pink noise or white noise, sample the signal from the microphones, and you get immediately the whole spectrum of absorption coefficient. So in practice, the operator cannot make the things wrong. Is fast, it just takes 1 or 2 minutes, the measurement, instead of 1 or 2 hours, and the operator has no influence on the result, which is a very important point. Any question? Okay. Stop and make the first break.